this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Bro Love, editor of the Enquirer, your host. Co-hosting with me again, Casey Sloan. Hello, Casey.
Hi, it's so good to be here again.
Well, thanks for being here. And we have with us for the first segment, our newsy segment, before we get to our special guest, which our special guest this week is none other than soon-to-be Reds Hall of Famer Aaron Harang.
Mm-hmm.
The workhorse.
Yes. Yep.
The pitcher's pitcher. So it'll be fun talking to Aaron Harang in a little bit. But first, we brought in our expert reporters on all things cops, immigration, you name it. We've got Cam Knight.
Hello.
Hey, Cam. And David Ferrara. You guys combined forces, kind of like the Wonder Twins, right? Am I going back too far? Casey, do you know who the Wonder Twins are?
No,
I knew it.
Over my head.
David doesn't know it. Cam, you know it.
Of course I did.
Yes. It was a late 70s, 80s era Saturday morning cartoon. It was the Super Friends in the Hall of Justice, which looked just like Union Terminal.
Because the illustrators lived right across the street from it.
That's right.
No way.
But because it was Saturday morning cartoons, it couldn't be all serious. So the comic foils were the Wonder Twins. Yeah, and they had really sus superpowers. Do you remember, Cam?
No,
I didn't know we were going to go down this rabbit hole, but yeah. So when they activated their Wonder Twin powers, there was a boy and girl twins, right?
Yeah.
They were like teenagers, maybe. One was able, her superpower was to turn into an animal, whatever she wanted. So if the situation called for like an eagle, she could turn into an eagle. But her brother, he got screwed because his superpowers, he could turn into like forms of matter. So like ice or water.
Yeah, that's
or
fun.
Wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a ripoff.
It was a total ripoff.
How are they fighting? I want to see them in action now because how are you?
We'll have to add some links to this. But now let's get back to the serious subject matter here, because I wanted to talk about the story that you worked on, a very unusual situation regarding law enforcement and ICE enforcement activities. A police chief from a town in Ohio who I have to admit I had never heard of, Gratis, crossed the boundaries, the jurisdictional boundaries, and showed up unannounced at some Cincinnati public schools, announcing that she was there to do, on behalf of ICE, to do wellness checks. And people are like, say what? So, Cam, you want to fill in the details from there?
Yeah, so there was an immediate outcry after this happened. Apparently, it was a situation where the staff sort of didn't even engage with these officers. It was the police chief of Gratis, Tonina Lamana, and another officer from that department, and they didn't engage with them. But the school board immediately launched an offensive and put out a press release. And one of the school board members, Eve Bolton, called this police chief a puppet of ICE. And then Sheriff Jones in Butler County weighed in. He's a staunch proponent of immigration enforcement. And he called what this police chief did an embarrassment.
Okay, let's pause. Let's linger on that for a moment, okay? Because for those who don't know, Sheriff Jones, Richard Jones in Butler County, is an enthusiastic partner of ICE. He has converted a significant portion of the Butler County Jail to be an ICE detention facility. He's the guy who has a sign in front of the jail that says illegal aliens here. And I'm quoting the sign, not trying to be insensitive with my terminology. So if your immigration enforcement activities cause Richard Jones to say you're an embarrassment, you might need to check yourself. Like
that was a surprising turn of events for me to hear him say something like that.
Yeah. So, David, tell me a little bit about this program, because there is an actual legit ICE program where they pay local law enforcement officers a lot of money. In fact, some small town police departments have beefed up their staffing because of taking advantage of these dollars. But what is the actual intention of this program? How is it supposed to work?
Absolutely. So the program, it's called under the statute, under the federal law, it's called the 287G program. And without getting too deep into the weeds, for many years, there have been opportunities for local law enforcement to partner up with Immigration and Customs Enforcement on a wide degree of types and ways. It could be as little as being able to execute warrants on behalf of ICE. It could be as little as, you know, just holding inmates until ICE can get custody of them. But it could also be, and in this case was, what they call a task force agreement. And what that allows for the Gratis Police Department to do, as well as the Butler County Sheriff's Office and other police departments and sheriff's offices in Ohio that have signed up with this agreement, is it allows local law enforcement to partner alongside ICE and actually enforce immigration policy. So if they pull somebody over on the side of the road for a traffic stop, they can run their immigration status and say, hey, this person doesn't have the proper documentation, and take them into custody. If a law enforcement agency did not have that 287 agreement with ICE, federal law can't be enforced by local law enforcement. So traditionally, that wouldn't be the case. But when police departments partner up with ICE, they can do that.
So this particular activity was air quote wellness check, but really searching for unaccompanied minors who typically end up in this country but don't have family or a stable home life. And if I remember the numbers correctly that the Trump administration put out there, there were estimated like 450,000 unaccompanied minors, and they have found about 150,000. And this isn't a deportation activity. This actually started during the Biden administration to provide assistance, really.
Right. So the unaccompanied alien child initiative, which was what this police chief was doing, she was going and checking on them under this initiative, the umbrella of this initiative, was meant to check on these kids who crossed the border unaccompanied and then were placed with, again, at the beginning, vetted sponsors. But our reporting has showed that at some point during this sponsor transfer thing, that vetting process did break down at a certain point. So there were some kids that were, they didn't quite know where they were placed or whatever. But a lot of these vetted sponsors were family members or whatever. But it's just that these kids, when they came across the border, were not accompanied by somebody that they could were going to stay with.
So back to Chief Tonino LaManna. What happened with her after this?
So she was placed on leave. There was a couple quick executive session meetings of the Gratis Village Council in Ohio. If you're not big enough to be a city, you get to be a village. So Gratis is a village, and they have a village council, and they placed her and the other officer on leave to kind of conduct an investigation. There has since been reports out of the town that the officer, not the chief, but this other officer, has resigned, and at this point, it's going to be up to the department or up to the village to decide what to do.
I just looked it up. The population of the village of Gratis, Ohio, is approximately 725 to 842 people.
That sounds about right. I was up there on Sunday, and very small village. Everybody knows everybody. And everyone that I spoke with echoed the fact that this is abnormal for Gratis. Normally, they're not having these sort of big firefights where people are, you know, even from the outside or within, having such, you know, tumultuous discussion about what's going on in town. And, you know, when I did go there and spoke with different folks, a lot of people feel that, you know, there was some information that was communicated, some that wasn't. The chief said to me that she had made counsel aware of this agreement with ICE, and that, you know, that she had ICE's backing to come down to Cincinnati. However, in this brief meeting, the mayor read off a prepared statement that said that the village does not condone her activities and was not aware that they were going to be performing wellness checks down in Cincinnati.
Well, and if you read, you know, just the general description of these arrangements, it does specify that the local law enforcement is is to help or assist within their jurisdiction.
Right.
Like the ICE agreement does send, supersede, or trump, no pun intended, the standard rules of engagement. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a police officer from Covington, Kentucky, if you're going to conduct any kind of business in the city of Cincinnati, there's protocol for that.
Right. And ICE's explanation to some of that was that this activity of going and checking on these kids, they made their statement very clear that this is not considered enforcement. So maybe that's a semantic argument, but they were saying that what this police chief was doing was not enforcement. And then they didn't come out and say whether that affects jurisdictional rules or anything like that, but they did say, you know, it's not enforcement. That was their big statement.
Well, and your reporting also revealed, and great job, by the way, this was a interesting, complex story. And I think your reporting by far was, and I'm biased, obviously, was the most comprehensive and answered as many questions as possible in a situation that had a lot of questions. But typically, and I got this from your reporting, when these wellness checks are conducted, it's very infrequently done in schools, because if a kid is in school, you would assume that they've got somebody taking care of them, making sure they have a good night's rest, feeding them, getting them off to school. Like if they're attending school, they're probably not in need of a wellness check. That typically these are done in like residences, homes,
right,
you know, on the street.
Yeah. And the Butler County Sheriff's Office, who has conducted these wellness checks as well, but only in their jurisdiction, they didn't want to go outside their jurisdiction. They said that they were going in evenings to residences, and they were clearly informing everyone that it was not, they weren't going to be asking about immigration status. They just wanted to see if the child lived there and that kind of stuff. And the impression I got from Butler County was that reacting to what happened with Gratis was Butler County seemed to have a much more, we're trying to be a good neighbor. We're trying to be a good neighbor to, you know, to the residents, to the community.
And to build off of that too, I think that the fact that this is so rare to be happening at schools, you know, Shauna Murphy, the superintendent of Cincinnati Public, said that this is the first time they've encountered anybody coming in claiming to be working for ICE or on behalf of ICE. I think the fact that this is one of the first times this has happened, when school officials are on alert, concerned about ICE coming into schools and getting access to children, the fact that this is the first time this has happened is why it's raised so much alarm.
Right. I won't say the larger issue, but the reason this raised a lot of eyebrows, caused a lot of concern, is fear, concern that ICE agents may, you know, step up enforcement and do that in schools, which hasn't happened.
Right.
But man, people are nervous. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've gone into, you know, there's a Mexican restaurant that I love in, I think, Montgomery. It's called La Jaiba, which means the crab. they have burritos bigger than your head, which, you know, it's a good place. So I'm going to plug them. They have all of the information on their front counter for assisting immigrants of, you know, whatever their status is, or if they have status issues, how to get help, what your rights are. I mean, in that community, they're on high alert for a very good reason. And you know, whether you agree with the stepped up enforcement or not, it has disrupted lives. It has, you know, there has been instances of overstepping. There's been instances of, you know, finding people who should be in the court system. You know, wherever you stand on the issue, depending on, you know, what your perspective is, this could be very troubling, to think that, you know, representatives of ICE are coming in unannounced to schools.
Well, and
the district responded as you expected they would in that situation.
And on top of that, it's this idea that it's an outside agency. So it's not ICE itself. It's this other small department being sent into a place that they're unfamiliar with, which has just, it seems like a recipe for trouble.
And it's worth knowing, too, this is a day that specifically Cincinnati Public has trained for. Since the Trump administration entered into office in January 25, you know, the district has actually trained its staffers on ICE-specific security protocols. And we obtained a training document that shows a step-by-step guide for how to respond to immigration enforcement activity and to make sure that there's, if ICE were to show up in Cincinnati Public Schools, that a warrant is shown, that general counsel is looped in, and that every T is crossed and every I is dotted before any information or children are handed over.
So bottom line, this was a epic failure in protocol by one Tonina Lamana. What's the future hold for her as we wrap up?
Well, she's still on leave. There'll be, I'm assuming the Gratis Council will take their investigation seriously. I mean, Cincinnati's own police chief has been under investigation for months now.
Seven months.
Who knows how long it will take in Gratis. And then they'll probably make a decision from there.
Someone told me this is akin to Barney Fife rolling into New York City.
It felt like Mayberry.
No disrespect to Gratis, but just like the audacity and the, you know. Okay. Well, guys, what an interesting story. Appreciate you popping in to talk about that. But no offense, I'm more excited to talk to Aaron Harag. I mean, I see you guys every day, but all right, Casey, should we bring in the soon-to-be Hall of Famer?
I think we should, yeah.
Let's do it. Special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and as promised, and boy, we are excited, with us live from San Diego, is that right? Is that where you are, Aaron?
Yes.
Soon to be official Hall of Famer, Reds Hall of Famer, Aaron Harang. Welcome to the That's So Cincinnati podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
So you got a big weekend coming up. Are you excited?
Yeah, excited, nervous. But, you know, I think more so excited to get to come back to Cincinnati, bring my family back. Obviously, my wife, Jen, was there with me the whole time, and our oldest one was there. We raised her for 4 years there before my last year playing there. And then my wife was pregnant with our twins at the time, my last season there in 2010. So we're excited to bring them back and get to see what Cincinnati's all about. And my son's totally into it. I've taken him to spring training, and so he knows a lot of guys. He's been watching the games constantly, and he's super jacked. I mean, I think we all are. So we're looking forward to it.
So for the benefit of our listeners, just a quick bio on you. Five times you were the opening day starter. That might be close to the record, if not the record. I should have looked it up, but
I think Mario Soto had five as well, and but I had him five in a row, so that's, I get to hold something over Mario.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was definitely an honor to have that.
You in 2006, you led the National League in complete games with six, which, that's a massive number by today's standards. Like last year, no one had more than two complete games. Same in 2020. Let's start right there. As a guy known as a workhorse, somebody who lived for eating up as many innings as possible, is it hard to look at pitch counts and the way the game is managed today, from your perspective?
Yes and no. I understand. I mean, it's a totally different game with all the analytics and all the stuff that goes into, you know, trying to find out the perfect situation, you know, and I enjoy watching the game. Obviously these guys throw away a lot harder. It is different to watch it, but you know, you understand it's part of the change in the game. You know, it changed when I was there compared to the guys 20 years before me. So, you know, it's just how evolution of the game is.
So tell us a little bit about what it was like when you got the call. You knew you were on the ballot. People were voting. Were you expecting to get in this year, or was it a surprise?
It was a surprise. There was an outstanding group going up that I was going up against. And, you know, it was one of the, you just never know. And so being able to get that phone call, I know my kids were very excited for it. And when Rick texted me and said, "Hey, we need to talk," Rick Walls of the Hall of Fame, it was, my kids were home and they were trying to be quiet. I had them on speaker. And, when he told me, they went crazy in the background, but silently. It was kind of fun to watch them. They were jumping up and down and like cheering in silence. And, you know, so it was a fun day to get to find that out. And, you know, we've been looking forward to getting back out there and being part of this. 'Cause I got to do it as a player. I was at two of them, 05 when Eric Davis went in and 08 when Larkin went in. So I know what the whole weekend's about. I know it's very special. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to actually getting to be a part of the main part of it now this year. So,
well, you mentioned Mario Soto. I was looking up the pitchers that you are enshrined with now that have worn a Reds uniform. Some massive names. Jim Maloney. We mentioned Mario Soto. The old left-hander Joe Nucksall. Jose Rijo. Yep. Bronson Arroyo. And now Aaron Harang. How does that feel to be on that short list of some of the best pitchers that have ever worn a Reds uniform?
It's really crazy to think about, because knowing the amount of guys that have played for the Reds, you know, worn that uniform, and some of the great pitchers that have, you know, been a part of that organization, and to be on that handful, be with that handful of names is, it's an amazing honor. You know, really, I never thought when I was there playing, I never looked at that, never thought of it. I just went out there and pitched, and I knew I wasn't trying to play for the numbers to get into it. You don't think of that when you're playing. And so, you know, my goal was to go out and pitch every fifth day and throw as many innings as I could. And, you know, the numbers will show up. The strikeouts will show up. The innings pitched, the, you know, all that stuff's going to show up if you're out there performing. And so, yeah, to be on that list and to know all those guys, you know, I got to be around Nucksall, you know, got to be around Mario, got to be around Maloney, and, you know, and then pitch with Bronson and pitch with Danny, to be able to, you know all those guys personally and get to be on that list with them. It's such a huge honor.
Yeah, I should have mentioned Danny Graves, who was inducted 2 years ago. So you're in your mindset every day, you wanted to finish the game. You didn't want to let Danny out on the mound, right?
No, I was. Funny thing is some a lot, and it's a lot. Some people know it, but some people don't. I used to put 9 pieces of gum in my jacket pocket, and I chew a new piece every inning. And when I came out of the game, if I had any left, I was like, oh, okay. Didn't fully get my job done today. You know, my goal was to not get the bullpen guys in there, give them a break, give them a day off. That was my mindset. And, you know, when I was going out there and me and Bronson both kind of had that mindset there in 06, 07 when we were going. And, you know, we had that mindset. We're going to give these guys a day off, and then they'll be solid the other 3 days. And so, yeah, it was that was what I thought of every time I went out, is I want to, if I do have to come out, I want to come out in between innings. I don't want to come out leaving a mess on the bases for my reliever to have to take care of. I'm going to come out in between innings so my reliever can have a fresh inning to start, you know, or I don't want him pitching at all today. That was kind of the way I thought went about things.
Well, that leads to one of my most favorite Aaron Harang stories, and that's you actually pitched into extra innings. You pitched 10 complete innings, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's a short list of people there. Tell us a little bit about that day. Surely it was Dave Miley. No, it was who was
Pete McCannon. McCannon. Jerry Nairn had just gotten let go.
So you had the interim manager.
Pete was there on an interim basis, and I finished the ninth. I think I was at 98 pitches through nine. And I walked in and Pete's standing there ready to shake my hand. And I walked by him. I said, I'm not done. and I walked right by him, and he followed me down the dugout and he goes, no, that's it. I go, I haven't hit my pitch count. You know, my pitch count's 110, 115. And that's how it's going to be. And he stood there and he argued with me. And I said, listen, either tell the boys to score a run, and then the game will be over, and then we can shake hands. Or I'm going to go back out there next inning, and you're going to have to go out and drag me off the field, and I don't like your chances of getting me off the field. and he looked at me, and he said, okay, all right. And he turned around and walked away. And as I walked back out to go out for the inning, I said, I'll be out of here in 12 pitches. So he just... all right. And I went running back out. And when I went running back out, the fans went absolutely nuts.
I remember that. Yep.
It was, I'm getting chills thinking about it right now. I went out there and came back in 11 pitches later, and Pete's standing there to shake my hand. And I said, still haven't hit my pitch count. And I walked past him again. And he came down and he goes, listen, I might be an interim, but they'll still fire me if I let you go back out for the 11th. And so after some talk, I finally conceded and said, fine, you let me go 10. I'd like you to be here the rest of the season, you know, joking around. And so, yeah. And the funny thing is years later, he was coaching me in Philly my last year in 15. And he told this story to a bunch of the guys in the clubhouse, like, that I threatened to fight him because I wanted to go back out and pitch. And so, and they were laughing about it because they knew my mindset, like how I was about, I'm staying out here as long as I can. And so, yeah. So we still, when I talk to him, we text every once in a while. And, anytime I've seen him, I'll bring it up and be like, yeah, you remember that time? And he goes, yeah, I do. I tell the story all the time. So.
Well, I was just looking this up because I couldn't remember. You're listed as 6'7", and I know that these, you know, these stats exaggerate a little bit, but you're every bit of 6'7", I think. So I probably would let you pitch if I were him as well.
Yeah, it was, you know, and when I get in the mode in a game, like, I'm pretty locked in. You might see me in the dugout, like, talking to the guys and stuff. It's just to kind of keep me semi-distracted, but I was still always locked into the game when I was out there. And, you know, there was times, you know, I earned the respect from Jerry and Pete. And then when Dusty came in, and, you know, there was times when I'd be out there and I'd be at 80 pitches and just mentally I was fried, and I'd go up and I'd be like, listen, Skip, I don't know if I got any more. Like, I'm just mentally, I'm done today. And, you know, and then there was days where I'd be at 110 and I come back in and be like, hey, I got another one. And they let me go back out. So, you know, it was earning the respect and the trust from the manager. You know, they always said, they're like, listen, you go back out there and you give it up, you're going to get notched back down, and that you're going to have to work back to get to that point. And so, you know, I was able to do that throughout my career and be able to, you know, just be up front with them. It was, you know, and yeah, there was times that I pushed, and, you know, every once in a blue moon, you'd fail at it, or, you know, but most of the time I learned myself and knew how far I could push myself, you know, but to, be out there and make sure we were given an opportunity to win. So,
well, before we talk about this weekend, we wanted to just generally catch up with you. You're back in your hometown of San Diego. We learned from our good friend and colleague Shelby Dermer, who interviewed you, that you are you're filling up your free time now with coaching softball and baseball.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. I played softball in high school, so second base, and I have to know what it's like to coach softball from an MLB baseball background, like your perspective on it.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Like as far as just infielders' reaction times and, you know, with the shorter bases, mm-hmm. But it's very small ball. You know, unless you're like a big program, like out here, you know, we have our small programs and we're kind of a smaller program because it's a smaller private school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but a couple years ago, we did really well. We got into the CIS finals. We ended up losing in the ninth inning, 2-1. It was a heartbreaker because it was a team that we crushed both times during the season. And then all of a sudden their pitcher decided to pull out a gym that day and really battle us. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, I joke and I say, the softball girls are one timers. You tell them one time and that's it, that you don't have to tell them again.
Yeah.
Like the boys, it's like, you know, sometimes you gotta repeat a lot and, you know, and so, but it's so much fun. Both my daughters, my oldest daughter played her sophomore year. And then, you know, she got into theater stuff,
mm-hmm.
Did stage managing that. And then now my younger daughter of the twins, she's a freshman this year and she's playing. And so I'm getting to coach her as well. And then my son's a freshman also, and he's playing baseball. So, you know, I try and hop up to the baseball field when I have the time. If we're done with practice early or we're not having a practice that day, you know, I'll jump over and go help and talk to the pitchers and watch bullpens and stuff. So, you know, I try and do that. It does. It keeps me busy, you know, 5 days a week. And, you know, but it's extra time I get to spend with my kids and,
mm-hmm.
you know, be around them and get to know their friends and, you know, who they're hanging out with at school. And so, it definitely helps. And, but it's been a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if it was a little bit easier to teach the girls instead of the high school boys.
but there is so many differences this year. Too, because I took over the head coach's role this year.
Mm-hmm.
Last 3 or 4 years, I've been the assistant, and it's definitely different. I went up to the umpire. I go, hey, I need to. I'm gonna, you know, the flex player compared
yeah.
to it's similar yeah. to a DH, but. The flex can just be in the field and then you have a basically a hitter, the DH for them. So
yep.
I'm still kind of confused by that rule. So I try not to use it if I don't have to. but you know, then, you know, they talk about, you know, subbing in, what is it? You know, there's different lingo for all that. I totally got into, I didn't get into it with an umpire. He was actually really cool. He was like, listen, here's my number. If you have any questions or you need to work out the wording, like totally give me a call. So he was super cool about it. So that it was definitely a help. So yeah, it's definitely different in ways, but a lot of similarities just based on the thought process and the, you know, the cuts and relays are different too, because
yeah.
the field's so much smaller where baseball, it's like, hey, get out there, you know, or softball that you're just like, hey, just basically turn around and you're cutting off
yep.
from your position you're at. So yeah, it's a lot of fun though. And, you know, I have a fun time. you know, being out there and getting to teach these girls some different mindset and thought processes over anything else.
Now, your son's a pitcher, right?
He pitches, plays outfield. You know, he used to play infield, but I think he's gotten more to really dig in the outfield and then doing the pitching stuff. So,
is it nerve-wracking watching him pitch?
Well, he hasn't been able to pitch this year because he had some shoulder, like, tendonitis or something. So it was he's been shut down. We had to shut him down for a little bit. And watching his mechanicals side of things, we had to do some restructuring on his mechanical throwing form, which we think is what caused that. So he's building back up right now. We've been throwing flat grounds in the front yard.
Okay.
And, you know, getting them built back up endurance wise. So I think, once we get back from this trip, he'll be pretty close to getting back on the mound and pitching. So.
All right. Well, this weekend you're going to be, inducted with one of your teammates, Brandon Phillips.
Yes.
And, you played during an era with some fun, interesting players. You overlapped with Ken Griffey Jr. We talked about Bronson Arroyo, Homer Bailey, who threw two no hitters.
I have that bobblehead.
Yes, that's an awesome bobblehead. I have your bobblehead, by the way, Aaron. I have quite the collection. So,
okay.
Yes. I think you have at least one or two. But anyway, Adam Dunn, Joey Votto. Mm-hmm. Do you keep in touch with any of those guys? Any stories you're willing to share about being a teammate to some of those well-known personalities?
Yeah. It was crazy coming up and becoming a teammate of Griffey. My couple starts in, I faced the Reds when I was in Oakland. It was my second interleague start. So I got to pitch in Riverfront, which is pretty cool. And have the background of Great American Ballpark, in left field. So, and then the next year getting traded over and playing in that ballpark, and Riverfront wasn't even there. So, it was kind of crazy to see the difference just in the year, how much that area had changed. But yeah, getting to play with Griffey, I mean, that was a guy he grew up watching and idolizing, and just his swing was the best swing ever in baseball. And getting to be around him and realize like with his teammates, what a character he is. He's a big kid. It's and we all are. It's kind of crazy. Like that locker room, we're just a bunch of big grown kids that, enjoy having fun. And, he would be right in there. You know, we'd have Halo was kind of the big thing. So we would have like big Halo tournaments. And then we went to a phase where we were all playing Tiger Woods golf on PlayStation and Xbox. And so we'd have tournaments and guys would bring their setups on the road, and we'd get together and in his suite or in any of the other guys that might have a suite, and we'd get extra TVs brought in, and we'd have full on tournaments, video game tournaments in their rooms and stuff. And one funny story, and I know Jim Day might even have a picture, but our bracket for the NCAA bracket, we finished it up, and Josh Fogg won and was supposed to be getting paid. And so he was bugging Griff, hey, when am I getting my money? Blah, blah, blah. So one day I roll into the ballpark, and there's a armored truck in the parking garage and a guy pushing a pallet in, and we get into the clubhouse, and this guy, armed security guy, comes walking in with this huge pallet, and they start stacking it, and Griff comes over and goes, hey, right here, he had him paid out in all pennies.
Oh gosh.
And they stacked the box. It was the boxes that you used to get, as a kid, we used to roll pennies and take them into the bank and cash them out. Whatever. No, he had the whole, like, the boxes that would come in, and it was like $50 a box.
Like from the mint.
From the mint, right? All stacked in a pyramid in front of his locker.
Oh my gosh.
And Josh came in that day and couldn't even get into his locker. He had to like move it all. But he said he spent half the season trying to take those into banks to cash them out. And he said eventually banks were like, yeah, we got enough pennies around here. We don't need them anymore. And so yeah, it was big jokes like that. He was a pretty good prankster, Griff was, but just being around him, watching him and Dunn go at it in batting practice to having their own little homer derbies. And, then being around Votto when he came up and, he was a quiet, disciplined player. But when he finally loosened up around you, he could be a real character. Which you probably seen. I mean,
yeah, especially at the end of his career, I think he.
At the end of his career, and I think he realized, like, I gotta maybe not take too much so seriously. But that's what made him a great player, was his discipline and his, work ethic. And Homer, I mean, Homer was just, he just had raw talent as far as throwing a baseball, and he was a character. I mean, he was our avid hunter on the team, so he would tell us his hunting stories and stuff. And I got to be with Griff, with being around Larkin, two Hall of Famers, and Scott, and eventually getting to be around Scott Rolen, another Hall of Famer. So, I went through an era of a lot of players in that stretch too, being a rebuild period for the Reds. But, it was a lot of fun. I met a lot of great guys, still keep in touch with some of them. And now I do the Reds Hall of Fame Fantasy Camp in January. And so, some of those guys do come back and play, so I get to see them. And, it'll be interesting now trying to, I'll probably be back at Reds Fest a little more often, and, getting to see some of those guys there too. And so, it was a fun time. Obviously there was tough periods, being a rebuild era, but it was a fun time to be around some great players and some good personalities. And, it was a good time just to be playing for the Reds at that point. And, even though we weren't winning, it was a good group of guys to be around.
So the last question I have for you, because we want to let you go and we thank you for your time. I think you have to give a speech during the gala, correct? Are you? Do you have your speech done? Have you rehearsed it?
I do have it done. I crammed this last weekend because I did not want to be on the plane trying to figure out the rest of it. So, I did some cram sessions this last. I started it a couple weeks back. Really, really diving into it. I was taking notes in my phone on things I wanted to talk about, and but it was a lot of back and forth on which direction I wanted to go. I did text a few guys because it'd been so many years since I had last been there. I'm racking my brain, guys. What do you how long do I have? Or how long should I not be up there? And I got a couple. Yeah, don't keep it. Don't make it too long, and don't be boring. Responses back.
Don't suck, right?
That's easy.
Don't be lame. So Yeah, it was fun to hear, and you know, and obviously we went back and forth, and they had some good pointers, but they just really said, they're like, just be yourself. You know, it's people want to hear about you, what you're up to, you know, your whole baseball, you know, journey, you know, some of the good stories.
Do you have any jokes you want to test out on us before you go live?
No jokes. I didn't divulge any stories that I'm going to be telling.
Saving it for the big night.
Yeah.
No guitar accompaniment like Bronson did 2 years ago.
No. I thought about bringing my daughter's little recorder.
Oh, that'd be good.
I was like, no, I don't have the skills that Bronson has as far as when it comes to music. Listening to music, yeah, a whole different story, but playing it, no. I'll leave that up to him. So, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it, but yeah, definitely nervous. It'll be, and I have to give a little, not even just for the gala, but when they do the on-field stuff, I got to get up there and say a few things, and that one's very short. So they're like, it would be 2 minutes max. I'm like, I don't even think I'll be up there 2 minutes, but yeah, it's going to be fun coming back and getting out on the field, you know, and just taking it all in from the field again. And I'm interested to see how my kids see it from being on the field, you know, and they were so young when I finished playing the twins that it is, they don't really remember it. But they got to go and play on the field all the time. You know, the different teams the last 5 years I was playing, they got to go out there and be out there on the field and experience it, but they were too young to remember it. So I'm looking forward to having them down on the field for that and getting to see just how big the stadium looks once you get on the grass.
Yeah.
Definitely a different atmosphere when you're down there looking up at how big that stadium is.
Well, Aaron, thanks again for the time you spent with us today. Congratulations on your induction into the Reds Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to see you in that red jacket. I guess they had to go to the big and tall section of the Hall of Fame jacket store for you.
Yeah, they were like back and forth. Hey, we need your jacket size. We need, you know, more sport coat size so we can, because they're having the jackets made. I'm like, okay. I was like, yeah, you can't just walk in and find a red jacket like that anywhere. So I know it's a custom build. So for all the guys. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it, and it's going to be a fun weekend.
All right. Yeah, well, definitely. Thanks again, Aaron, and
thank you.
Best of luck with your speech, and I know you're going to kill. So thanks again.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course, thank you.
Well, Casey, I hope I wasn't geeking out too much.
You were really excited, I could tell.
Oh, man, it's Aaron Harang. And he's so, like, chill.
Yeah, he is. He's very down to earth.
Down to earth. Very, like, you know, a little more talkative than I thought. You know, he had some good stories.
Yeah.
I think I do remember hearing about the pennies, the Griffey
crazy.
Prank.
And now pennies aren't made anymore. So, honestly,
can you imagine
they should have kept those.
Yeah. Now. All right. Well, I mean, this is the That's So Cincinnati podcast. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we have to talk about, you wrote the story, right? About secret menu item that maybe it's not universal.
Really? Yeah.
Maybe it's just that store. Maybe it's just that guy. But tell us a little bit about what you found.
Yeah. So I was scrolling on social media yesterday, a few days ago.
As your generation is wont to do.
Yes. And my job does call for it, you know, trending news reporter.
That's
so
right.
I come across this social media page. It's a husband and wife. The husband is a chef, and they're called the Everyday Chef and Wife. And they went to Kate, the wife's name, is from the Cincinnati area, and her husband were back in town, and they went to Skyline, and she went up to the window and just tried to order something that was secret off of Skyline's menu. I didn't know if Skyline had anything secret on their menu to begin with. Little did I know, the item is called a squeegoni.
Squeegoni?
Yeah. Squeegee almost.
Squeegoni? Sounds like my friend if I lived in like New York. There's my buddy Squigoni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You hear that? What do you think the food item would be?
Squigoni? Yeah. Like a coney with, I don't know, squid?
Right? Close. It's a hot dog, but instead of the hot dog, it's spaghetti. So essentially, it's like a three-way and a hot dog bun.
Okay. Kinda,
it's easier to, you know, if you're, all right. Some people say that if they're not, they're going to order a three-way, but you can't eat it in the car, so they'll get a coney instead. Well, now you have a compromise.
All right. So you take a bun.
Yep.
Instead of the spaghetti. Hot dog, you put spaghetti in it.
Yep.
And then you finish it off with however you
want to
finish.
Chili, cheese, onions. They got onions and mustard on theirs.
Okay.
I wonder if you could add beans. I wonder if you could do the whole.
A squigoni bean?
Yeah.
Like a four-way bean?
Yeah. I have a lot of questions. But they said it was good, so.
Okay, I don't know how I feel about the squigoni, but I do want to say that I was a pioneer in secret Skyline menu items before even people knew about secret Skyline menu items.
Yeah.
None that I served when I worked at the Skyline.
You
this
just
is
ate
because
it yourself.
You know, I worked weekends, and there was that, and we stayed open till after the bars closed. So there was sort of right. like a dead time from like 10 to 11, and then 12. All of, you know, when people start leaving the bars, we get busy again. Mm-hmm. And so my coworkers and I would experiment with different ways to assemble the Skyline ingredients, and so I came up with the Grippo's. You know how Grippo's does the collabs with everyone?
Yes. Yeah.
And like, what's that place called? Tickle Pickle has a menu item, or at least they do for Taste of Cincinnati, called Godsmack. Okay. They name a lot of their dishes, you know, pun in cheek about, you know, named after like metal rock bands. So, you know, Godsmack, Gobsmack. But it's basically a macaroni dish with crunched up Grippo's barbecue potato chips. Ooh. On top. And that Grippo's barbecue, you know, seasoning has been the, you know, the basis of many collabs. But back in the day, before even that was happening, I decided instead of crunching oyster crackers on top of my three-way, that I was going to crunch barbecue Grippo's on top of my three-way. And a coworker was like, that actually looks really good.
Yeah.
So I was the person who came up with it. And it was like a secret menu item for the employees, is incorporating barbecue Grippo's into like various Skyline menu items.
Life changing.
You know what? If I could eat one now, I would.
Yeah.
You know?
We need to call Skyline. What would happen if we just called them up?
Just call them up and ask if they could.
And we'll name it. Yeah. The Burl Love. Yeah.
The Burl. I don't think they'd go for that.
I don't know. They,
you know, it's kind of like it's changed. There's more ingredients to work with, because back in the, you know, the late 80s when I was on the steam table, we did plates, you know, which we call ways now. Mm-hmm. Like we call them plates.
Okay.
And conies. Mm-hmm. Bowl plain, bowl of bean or whatever. That was it. No burritos.
That's why I think they would
no
do it.
No salads. No fries.
Yeah.
No chicken chili. Trying to think of some of the other things
mac
you can
and
get.
Cheese. They have their own mac and cheese.
Yeah, you know, that's just, I think that's
cream.
A limited edition thing. Yes, yes. So we had to be pretty creative with a limited list of ingredients. And I think my concoction stands up today.
I think so too.
All right.
I think so too.
All right, Skyline, you know how to get a hold of me if you'd like me to to consult.
Work out everything.
Well, on that note, should we wrap things up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, the one, the only, Phil Didion.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And if you value local journalism, and who doesn't, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.